A quick parental advisory. This episode of Tales Through Time contains explicit language.
Tales Through Time.
Hey, welcome back to Tales Through Time. I'm Troy Newman.
And I'm Keegan Rudvik.
Keegan, in a lot of the stories we've been talking about up until now, kids in particular have been a big point in a lot of people's lives. Have you ever given any thought to having children yourself?
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because I was actually just having this conversation yesterday. When I was younger, I used to want some kids. Mm-hmm. I think over the years as I've gotten older, kids to me have become maybe something that I don't particularly want. I think it's after working with kids, actually, that I think it's more like I enjoy watching kids, hang out with them, taking care of them for, you know, in short little spurts. But maybe I'll feel different later on. You know, maybe once it's your own kids, you know, some people say, well, you know, you don't know unless you have one. Well, it's like, well, I'm pretty sure I'd like to know first. But I would think I would prefer like one, at least a biological child, but then I'd be open to adopting. But I'd be perfectly fine not having any kids.
I've always thought I'd like to have kids. In particular, when I think of myself as a father, I've always imagined myself with a daughter. I've always felt like I would be the kind of dad that would just be wrapped around his daughter's finger, essentially. Right. My little princess, as it were. I have not had that opportunity up until now, but who knows what the future has in store for us. It's one of those things where you're never entirely sure about it until you have a kid, regardless of how much you want to be sure of it beforehand. It's just a different kind of responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Nowadays, especially for us millennials, people are having children much later in life. You know, they're focusing more on them, where the previous generations are having kids pretty young. And that's not to say that it isn't still happening, but people are focusing more on themselves and their own happiness, and then having kids later on in life, and maybe not so many. But I think a lot of people are like that, where they're like, I didn't know if I was ready for a kid until, you know, I held them in my arms.
You kind of touched on it, but people in our generation typically don't have kids very young. However, there are some that do. There's a man I've known for years who had a son at the age of 17 while still in high school. Not the youngest we've talked about, but still rather young. He didn't think he was ready for it at the time. It came up as a surprise. He was not intending to have a child, and it essentially shaped the rest of his life. This is the story of Jake Meyer.
Lived in Eastman with my mom and my grandma until I was in like third grade. And then I moved to Purge Sheen until I was in finished fourth grade. And then I moved to Waseca, and that's pretty much where I stayed. But I consider pretty much the southwestern part of Crawford County where I'm from.
Like, all right.
You tell people you're from Waseca, they're like, what? Purge Sheen? Maybe you have a chance. And then if they're like, no, La Crosse, yes. Okay, I'm an hour below La Crosse.
I do find that when you're trying to tell people where you live in Wisconsin, you just have to keep going bigger and bigger cities. And then like, okay, well, there, but go, you know, an hour south and maybe like 20 minutes east. And that's where I am.
Despite moving around a lot in his younger years, Jake never really struggled at school. Even though he would occasionally get in trouble, he never actually struggled with his education. He didn't get the best grades, far from it actually, but that's because he refused to do homework. If he couldn't get an assignment done in class, he just wouldn't do the assignment. But luckily, test scores were able to help carry him through most of his schooling. Unfortunately, those test scores were not enough by themselves to help carry him through the later years of his education. And that would impact the passion he found in sports.
I was lucky because I was better at sports than most people. So I didn't hang out with the athletic people at that grade or the cool kids at that one. But when they wanted to play football, I was always going to get to play. I was going to be on the other team, which I liked better. It made me better because I had to verse them, which means I had to get better than them to be able to even have our team have a chance. We won sometimes, so it worked out.
Did you continue pursuing that passion of sports in school?
Tried to for a long time. I think there's multiple other things that made it so I didn't get to play sports. I always tried to play sports. I always went out for the team. I'd always be suspended for the first half of the season, which never helped. And I was really small. Like, until I was a junior, I was like 5 foot tall. I was really good at sports. Like, I was just an athletic kid, but I was always undersized, like just always, until I was a junior. And, you know, then I magically got tall over the course of a year. And now I'm 6 foot tall, so I'm a normal person. But yeah, I remember being really, really small. It made things really difficult. So the school did always want me to be able to play sports. So when athletic season came around, I would get sent to an alternative school so that I couldn't have grades for them to suspend me over.
I know he was talking about grades, but I just want to touch back on the height being 6 foot normal. As someone who is 5 foot eight, that is the average normal height. But I am surprised to hear that they, not surprised, what is the right word? Not clever.
It's almost like a loophole that,
exactly,
that the school decided to send him to this alternate school so that they couldn't suspend him over bad grades because he simply didn't have grades.
Just to go back to kind of like the section for the homework, I can sympathize not wanting to do homework at home. I was someone that would literally wait until the last minute, especially if there were papers, but I never not did my homework.
For me, it was the take-home grade school kind of homework. Like, you just have, what is 4 plus 3? I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to spend time trying to do that. I saw it as a waste of time when I could just be having fun instead.
No, that is fair.
With a couple of exceptions, when he would get in trouble during his early school years, most of his time in school was uneventful. That was until his later high school years, which, as we mentioned earlier, was when his son was born.
I was 18 when he was born. I was 18 by 3 months.
What was that time like for you?
Holy shit.
How about let's start when you first heard that his mom was pregnant. What went through your mind?
Well, at the time, she was in college and I was still a senior. So, like, the first thought in my head was not, okay, she's pregnant. Like, my first thought was, like, did she cheat on me? And it's not because we weren't having sex. We were doing that a lot. But she is only coming down, like, once, well, maybe once a weekend, you know, every 2 weeks, something like that, to be able to see me. And, yeah, we'd spend the whole weekend together. But you don't really know what somebody else is doing.
I like that he clarified about the amount of physicalness that they were having, his need to say, like, well, we were, and his initial thought of not being ready. It's more of like in that state of disbelief and panic. Because, I mean, he was 17 at the time, and I think that's everyone's worries. You know, are you ready? You're just starting your life at that time.
Still rather young, still not sure what you're mm-hmm. even going to be doing the next day, let alone for the next 5 years.
Exactly.
And suddenly this happens. Jake was 18 when his son Sterling was born. Despite being in high school still, his life started to change.
We wanted to make a plan of how we were going to handle everything before the baby came, so we weren't going to tell anybody, which didn't exactly go well, because, like, literally randomly, I walk into my mom's house one day, and she's like, hey, Jake, you want to hear something funny? I'm like, what's that? She's like, Isis said she had a dream where you had a kid with Alicia. And I remember when she said that, I stopped dead in my tracks. I'm like, I didn't say anything. And she's like, that was just a dream, right? I'm like, yeah, so. Yeah. And I remember she's just like, oh, no way. I'm like, yeah, so that's how that happened. Completely wasn't prepared to tell her yet. But it did. And then once my mom found that out, then she talked to the school, and then she just had him send me to the alternative school anyway. Because at the alternative school, you do schoolwork half the day, and then half of your day you would go and you could work a job, and that you get elective credits for that, which, wonderful setup, except for I didn't get a job right away. So, because she's like, oh, but you're going to have a kid, you need to work and all this, you know, that kind of stuff. And oh man, I was not ready for that. Not ready for that at all. That's, I don't think you can be ready for that. You can think you're ready for that. And, like, my dad wasn't around a lot when I was a kid, so I definitely wanted to be part of my kid's life, like, greatly. And tried to work at it and get school done, have a job so we have money for when Sterling's born.
You know, that's not the first time I've heard where someone's like, oh, I had a dream that you're having a baby. Like, that happens a lot. I wish there was some sort of study on that, like people predicting that. I do like that his mom was like, okay, you need to prepare. You're going to the alternative school so you can get a job and start providing for your kids. I do like that he said, because his father wasn't around, that he wanted to step up and be there for his kids. So he was going to do what it took to do that, which is always a great thing.
You hear it quite often among people in our generation, and maybe even people older than us in previous generations and whatnot, that when they become parents, they want to be better than their parents were, whether that be because their parents just weren't around, or if they were physically, psychologically abusive, whatever it may be. A lot of people in our generation just feel like they're going to do better when they first head into this. Because of Jake's issues with homework and his low grade scores, unfortunately, he wasn't able to actually graduate from high school. He did go on to get an HSED, which is a combination of a GED and a certificate on how to get a job. Wisconsin was one of the only, if not the only, state that was offering that kind of alternate to a high school diploma at the time. He went on to do that instead of the typical high school graduation. Then he moved in with his girlfriend at the time, Alicia, who was going to the University of Wisconsin-Stout. And from there, he tried and tried and tried to get a job.
Because we had the baby. He came July 1st. And we tried to make it work. But of course, she'd get mad at me because I'd end up quitting a job or I'd lose a job or, you know, whatever. I was hired. I went through a temp agency and they do the stupid little tests for you, that specific temp agency. They did a bunch of aptitude tests, which I scored really high on, as always. So they're like, cool, we can get you all kinds of different jobs. Well, we fucking needed to. So like, we went through multiple jobs. Like, I worked at Line and Googles for a while. I was the guy who I literally would spin the bottle so that the Indian was facing out on your pack of beer. That's a thing. I'm not joking. That was part of the line I was on for a while doing that. We built the cardboard cutout inserts thing. I've packed beer into boxes. Like, one of the jobs I had is I made diabetic pens. we made those. It was really cool. And I remember the first thing they, like, you, when you go there, you're in full lab coat, everything, you go in and, you know, you go to the sterile room and psh, on you, okay, walk in, you go in. This machine's dropping these things out and, like, you're looking. Like, there's all kinds of different stations, but the one I hated the most was you're supposed to grab this thing. Mind you can see I wear glasses now. I've probably needed glasses a long time. But so, like, they're like, okay, you're supposed to look at this, and it's purple. Then we made two colors, purple and blue. So you're looking at purple and blue. He's like, if you see three or more black specks or discolored specks, you got to throw that one out. I'm like, so shit's blurry already, right? So, like, I'm, like, this close to these things. Like, yep, that one's good. Yep, then you get in trouble. Like, yeah, you're letting too many ones that are supposed to be thrown out. God damn it. Fired from that job. Like, it's not even my fault, man. I'm trying. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, it's not like I'm fighting people or anything. Like, I'm trying. Put me in a different station.
You know, for a temp job, that actually sounds really fun, to be honest with you. And I'm actually kind of surprised, considering he's in there determining the quality of products, because I would feel like nowadays you need someone with
some kind of specialized training, almost.
Exactly, like quality assurance, where someone is like more, has studied the field and knows what's happening and looking into it. But nonetheless, it sounds like a great job. I mean, he sounds like he loved it.
I thought it was pretty cool. Unfortunately, it wouldn't be until years later that he would finally learn that he needed glasses. And it's unfortunate that his vision problems led to him losing that job. Unfortunately, his struggles with trying to keep and hold a job started to impact his relationship with Alicia as well.
Girlfriend cheated on me, of course, because, I mean, I wasn't really holding up my end of the bargain, I suppose, at that point, because I'm supposed to be the one making all the money, and it was being definitely rough on her, I suppose, with me losing jobs constantly. So she cheated on me. I stayed up there for a while, tried to make it work, and cheated on me again. Well, I guess by that time, we had agreed fully broken up, yet we were still living together and sleeping in the same bed. It was very awkward, I guess. But whatever.
With his relationship quickly going downhill, he called a childhood friend to come pick him up and help him and his son move away.
So she left, and then he came up and he picked me up, and we took Sterling and all as much stuff as we could put in his car and took him back down, and we moved in with Alicia's grandma in her basement. I was able to get a job at the casino in Prairie du Chien as a bartender while I'm just turning 19, and Ruby would watch Sterling for me. So he ended up having a wonderful relationship with his grandma, which was great, and I would pay her rent. But I ended up drinking a lot, like a lot. I didn't even know I was drinking a lot. My wake-up call to that was, I was supposed to live there for 6 months. And I remember one of my other friends, Chris, I ended up going to his house in the morning. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning, and he still lived with his mom at the time. And I went inside, and I was really close with Kathy. I've known Kathy a long, long time. And I came over, I'm like, hey, where's Chris? And then she's like, he's upstairs, I can go get him. She went up, I guess, I'm assuming woke him up. She came back down, she was talking to me at the table. And then she's like, why do you have a bottle of Jack? I didn't even think about it. Like, I'd been drinking that much. I was a bartender, so I always had access to alcohol whenever the fuck I wanted it. And I'm like, I don't know. That's just what I drink. And she's like, you need to stop. you need to stop. And that's when I realized I was depressed at the time. I felt like a failure. I may have had physical possession of Sterling at that point, but Ruby was doing more of the taking care of him than I was. And I was failing at everything. So I decided to make a change.
That was a little difficult to listen to, because you're essentially listening to someone at kind of their rock bottom coming to that realization of what's been happening. And I don't know if that speaks to anyone, where you don't realize where you're at until someone points it out to you. And it's great that Chris's mom, I think he said Kathy, point out and was like, you need to stop. It's great to have those people kind of be that voice for you, and that he is the kind of person that can hear that and make that conscious change, because some people can't. And I think it goes back to where he wants to be there for Sterling.
It's a theme that was repeated quite often during our interview, but everything he does to try to create a better life for his kids. At this time, he only has his son, Sterling, but that was enough for him to do what he could. So when the ground starts falling out beneath him, when he loses job after job after job, his girlfriend cheats on him, and he moves in with his girlfriend's grandmother because there's nowhere else for him to go. Luckily, like you said, there was someone in his life that was willing to point out there was a problem. Just that act was enough for Jake to realize that he was depressed and a change needed to be made.
I'd always thought about joining the army, and I talked to one of my other friends who was going to join the army as well, and he hooked me up with his recruiter, and we joined the army. I knew I could. When me and Alicia first had Sterling, we had a court hearing for custody, and at the time we both agreed for 50-50 custody, but in that court hearing, the judge decided that I was going to be required to provide him health insurance. Like, I have to. It's court mandated. Even though we both agreed we're 50-50 custody, we weren't married, the court had to make a decision then. When I'm 18 and she's 19, they're going to make a decision for the rest of our life, even though our relationship's working at this time. And yes, it was kind of nice, because obviously this whole thing happened. But I had to have health insurance for him, so I was like, I need to have a job that I'm not around alcohol. So I joined the military, and that's honestly the biggest catalyst to me joining the military. I know my mom was really upset about it. She didn't want me to go and all that stuff, but I think it helped. I was never in trouble with the law ever in my life. It was always school, but it definitely changed who I was as a person, because when I look back on me before, literally, if my head wasn't attached to my body, I probably wouldn't have it today. I couldn't keep track of anything. I had absolutely no ability to organize things, and I still suck at organizing things, but now, like, I can organize things in my way where, like, I know that stuff's over there and that stuff should be there. And, you know, like, it might not be filed and in line, but it's in that general area, and I know where the general area is at, and that's what's important. But yeah, that is the biggest catalyst that got me to do that. And I do think that change was for the better, because out of all the negatives of them that there is in the military, there's a lot of positives as well.
Having been in the military myself, I can 100% agree with him that while there's a lot of negative in the Army, there's definitely some positives. I would not be who I am today without the time I spent in the military. My catalyst for going into the military was a little different than Jake's. Mine was to find a way to pay for college. But ultimately, it doesn't really matter what drove you to the military, because the military will treat you the same regardless of your situation at the time.
You mentioned that before the military, he was very organized. And I know, like, in movies, they're like, they're very strict. You have to be up at a certain time, make your bed, nothing, the white glove, everything, make sure it's clean. Is that true? And is that what kind of helped him become more organized?
At least in basic training, that strictness and structure, like you were saying, the white glove treatment, that is there. Mm-hmm. At least when I was in basic training, I don't know if it's still there anymore. There were days where commanding officers would come up to the barracks, you'd all line up and not move a muscle while they go around and check everyone's lockers to make sure your jackets are all lined up, make sure the zipper is at the bottom of the jacket. Make sure your hats are folded correctly and on top, you know, all these little things. And the military is good at getting you to pay attention to the little details. It wasn't long after Jake first joined the Army that he would first go to the Middle East.
First, we're in the Maison province at an actual FOB. And it literally, the guys that had deployed before, like the guys who were like Sergeant First Class, Staff Sergeants, they're like, this FOB is totally cool because they were in Fallujah before. So they're happy to be there because, like, we're not going to die. Like, we just got to not be stupid. We'll live, right? And then we were there for, like, 2 months. And you kind of learn a couple things right away. Like, one, if you're one of the people who, you know, goes outside the wire a lot, you don't get a lot of time to go and use, like, the FOBs MWR where you get to, you know, they got satellites. I can go back and email your family and shit like that. You don't get to use those. So, like, because there's always fucking some, you know, fobbit who fucking never leaves the base who's like, oh, my lunch is done. I don't have some shit to do, so I'm just going to go over here and do what the fuck I want. And then when you get off mission, you're like, man, I really like the... Nope, you know, all the computers are full. So we used to drive. And remember, we had the big IED fucking anti-radio signal things in our trucks. I can't remember what the name of them anymore was, but we'd drive next to the MWR with one truck and leave that shit on so it'd kill the fucking internet. And then we'd sit there and wait till they all left, go park the fucking truck, and then we'd all go in and get on the fucking get on the computer so we could email home and shit. Because, like, we just didn't have a lot of time to do stuff like that because you were always prepping your truck, doing some kind of training, doing a walkthrough of the next mission. Like, we never actually had time to go do that, except for, like, right when you get off mission, you have the option to go eat or you go send some emails.
Quick note for anyone who doesn't have any experience with the military or know someone in the military. A FOB is a forward operating base. You can think of it as a long-term, yet still temporary, base of operations.
So when you mean forward operating, it's like they're pushing up into, I'm assuming, enemy territory.
Yes.
And when you mean outside the wire, that means like going outside the safe zone.
Yes, outside the base.
I didn't realize it was so strict that you were kind of going to and from and not being able to contact family. And did he say that they were cutting the power, the electricity, to get people off the computer so then they could sneak on an email?
Yes. With the U.S. War on Terror, IEDs, improvised explosive devices, kind of became a big way of attacking U.S. soldiers. One of the ways to combat that was to prevent a signal reaching an IED. You can essentially think of it like a truck emitting a signal that blocks other signals.
Like a scrambler, almost?
Yeah, yeah. Jake was a scout in the Army, So he would go outside the wire, as you heard quite often. He would have to leave base and scout out an area. Unfortunately, because he was leaving the base, anyone who was still on base would be able to hop on the limited number of computers that were available. Jake and his crew found a way to get on the computers despite not ever being back in time to make it onto the computers. They would leave that device on, keeping up this signal blocker, and as they're arriving back at the FOB, that would cut the connection to the internet, and the other soldiers on base would just assume there was some kind of internet problem and decide they would go do something else for the rest of their day, giving Jake and his crew an opportunity to hop on the computers and be able to message home and whatnot.
I mean, honestly, it's pretty genius.
Right? During his first deployment, though, him being a scout, his days in and around that primary FOB were limited because his job as a scout was to help establish new bases of operation.
Basically, it was like, hey, we're going to go explore this fucking area over here next to Iran, and we're going to be the first people that have been over there from America, and we're going to go and protect the border from incoming shit from Iran. Okay, cool. So, like, we go, and we convoy for fucking 2 days, maybe. So we're all, like, on mission constantly for 2 days. And then we finally got to this place, and we're like, oh, this place is cool. So we build a new FOB. Or no, we showed up at FOB Gary Owen. So now our whole big squadron is at this place. And then, I don't know if it was my first sergeant or my commanders, but, like, hey, they came up with this cool fucking idea of we're going to go even further. But only one troop's going to go, and it fucking magically is my troop. So cool, we're going to go there. So we go there, and there is, I remember we showed up, and it was probably, I'm going to guess, 5 or 6 o'clock at night. And when I say we showed up to fucking nowhere. There is fucking nothing at all around us. Like, it's fucking flat, and it's desert. And they're like, all right, this is it. This is where we're going to build it. Like, what? We're going to build it. So fucking, we spent like the next like fucking days filling sandbags and creating like a perimeter that was like probably about the size of the city block, right? And then we get that all set up. We get the radio set up. You know, it took a couple days. The radio probably got set up the first day because, of course, they always want to have comms. But we've only got like maybe 40 guys. So we're all tired as fuck. Mind you, it's like 100 and maybe 20 degrees. So we're fucking hot as fuck. We're like there for a little bit. We set up. We're sleeping on the trucks. And then, I don't know, it might have been a week. They send us like 3 semis full of HESCO barriers, which are like big asbestos-built fucking things that you fill with sand. So then we start filling these things by fucking hand, which is fucking ridiculous. But we make it even bigger. And then they're like, oh, this is really stupid. We should get like a Bobcat or something. So then they ship us a fucking Bobcat. Like, where the fuck was this 2 months ago? So then we fill these things. We build this base. We're not engineers. We're fucking scouts, right? But our first sergeant, as much as I fucking, like, me and him didn't necessarily get it wrong. I didn't really have a problem with him. He was a smart dude because he'd ask people, hey, what did you do before you were in the Army? We had some dumb motherfucker say, I used to be a carpenter. Well, guess what? You are now the guy who gets the blueprint and build every goddamn building on this place. This guy became the foreman. He's a fucking PV2, right? He was the guy who did construction first. He designed the defect. He designed the med hall. He designed the gym. And we'd fucking, they'd send us wood and we'd fucking build it. We're not engineers. We're scouts. Fuck that. We're engineers now. We're building because... fuck this, we're building the shit. And then once we build all these buildings, they weren't that bad. They weren't that bad. Well, you gotta think, you're building on sand. Mm-hmm. You don't have levels. We ended up getting hammers and nails. So I'm pretty sure it was all hammers and nails for the most part. We didn't have levels or anything. So we're trying to, you know, eyeball level shit and doing like, he showed us some random medieval fucking technique with a fucking string and shit, how you could fucking tell if it was level or not, and that's how we leveled the buildings. And fucking, so we build them, and they're done, and then once all that got built, like our first sergeant, I don't know what he was getting out of this, but he's like, all right, it's still really fucking hot. Like, no shit, we're in a desert. So, like, then he orders, like, this spray foam insulation stuff that is like, and he's like, we're just going to take this and we're going to spray it over the outside of everything. So then we put up tents, like the army style tents, and we got the shit and we sprayed the fuck out of all this stuff. And it looked like fucking little igloos in the middle of the goddamn fucking desert. But I will say this, it fucking worked because we got the fucking air conditioners and shit and put them into those things. And by God damn it, if they didn't stay fucking cold, I fucking lied to you.
So the scout squad had to go into the middle of nowhere and essentially were like, oh, hey, by the way, you're also going to build a whole fob.
An entire base of operations just out of nothing except canvas bags and sand.
Yep. That's great. You know, I'd love to live there.
Sounds like a great home away from home. Exactly. You know? Again, for anyone who is not clear on military terms and whatnot, a PV2 is the second lowest possible rank in the Army. Second lowest. And there was a guy who was a PV2 who was in charge of building this entire base because he was the one with experience.
I still can't believe that. This person's like, oh yeah, I did some carpentry. I mean, I would love to know like what he did. Like, did he just build like a few chairs, a few tables? They're like, great, we're gonna need you to build buildings now. That's the next logical step.
You know? That's quite a promotion there, at least. So Jake and his crew go through, they build this new fob, and shortly after, they're sent out yet again.
They're like, hey, once again, we want to move again. And who's the fucking magical people that gets picked? We are the magical motherfuckers that get picked. Again. You guys did such a great job here. We're going to live here, and you're going to go there. Like fucking. So they send us to this fucking place because they saw on a fucking GPS thing. They're like, it looks like there's an old airport here. So fucking we drive fucking 2 days away. Yeah, we found your airport. It's here. There's some airplane hangars, couple runways. Can we land AC-130s on that? I don't know. I'm not from the Air Force. So now that we're there, we have to go clear all these airplane hangars, right? Now that they're cleared, what's the next command? Well, now that you already got them cleared, we don't want you to leave because we don't want them to booby trap them. So you guys got to stay there until we can send people to build a base. Because like we built a little FOP where we were just at. They're going to build a super fob at these airframes because they can land AC-130s there. So like, oh yeah, we're going to build a new super fob. Cool. Took them 3 fucking months to send people to relieve us. So we're literally 12 guys having to pull 24-hour security for each other for like 3 months. We had to ration 1 bottle of water a day, 1 MRE a day. Like our clothes literally were so hard. Like, because when you go to bed, you'd take your uniform off, you'd leave your cotton shirt on, maybe your underwear, whatever. But you'd fucking lay your shit down on the ground so it could dry out because you're hot as fuck every day. And then when you wake up, your shit would literally be solid. And you'd pick it up and you could like fucking, like if you picked it up where you're, you know, you would be standing, you could bounce your feet off the ground and slowly break them back into being able to move. And then you put them motherfuckers on and that was your pants for the day. Like fucking... They'd send us like a resupply every 5 days, something like that. And so we lived like that for like 3 months where we couldn't take showers, couldn't wash our clothes. And in these airplane hangars, there's a bunch of bats that live there. So they're fucking shitting bat shit on you at night. And I remember after everyone did finally show up, this is jumping into the future, but after everyone finally did show up, they kind of built like chews inside of these airplane hangars. And I remember one time I was going and I went and I lifted up the freezer to grab a fucking Gatorade and a fucking snake fell on my shoulder from the ceiling. And I'm not a fan of snakes. So I like did the fucking ran like fucking Speedy Gonzales back. But then I'm like, oh, you know, you get the shakes. You're like, oh my God, it's so fucking gross. Fuck, I forgot my gun. So like, you know, walk back, get your gun and come back. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you? I'm just had a snake. Fall from the ceiling, which is like, it's not reachable. This is a fucking airplane hangar on my shoulder while I was getting in to get a Gatorade. Like, well, where'd the snake go? I'm not fucking sure. Like, I just kind of, you know, ran. Oh, it's fucking scary.
I'm mortified. Like, all of that is like nightmare, like worst case scenario. I could imagine not showering for three months, and the fact that they had to literally break in their uniform in the morning, and bats are everywhere, a snake falling from this. I mean, he went through it. I guess I'm also shocked that it took 3 months, to be honest, like, to get people out there. You would think...
I'm not.
I guess, yeah, I'm not in the military. I don't know.
My experience in the military, I am not surprised that it took that long for anything to get done. But yeah, those 3 months sound horrendous. Not being able to shower for 3 months. 12 people going through rounds to do 24-hour security.
The fact that it took 3 months is obscene, but it's even worse that they didn't send any other people to help out.
The security detail they had at these airplane hangars was the last significant thing Jake had to say about his first deployment. Soon after, he would head back to the States and quickly head abroad again, but not for a deployment to any combat zone. This time, he was going to Korea.
So, like, I'd been in a real unit the whole time that I'd been in the Army at that point. And what I mean by a real unit is a stateside unit that deploys. So when I go to Korea, the improcessor literally told every person there, "We consider Korea a take-a-knee duty station." I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? He's like, "That means the fastest way to make E5 is to be an E6. Like, we don't expect you to do a lot. Try to stay out of trouble. Most of you are going to get demoted." What the fuck? Who the fuck? That's not in... What? You don't tell... Most of the people, like, I had been deployed in a different unit before, and I'm going to Korea. Most of the people I'm there with just got out of fucking basic training. You can't fucking tell them that. That's your introduction. That was my introduction to Korea. I don't know if that was everybody's. That was mine, and I was fucking annoyed as hell because I just got out of a real unit that deploys. I tried to stay there, but I got orders to go to Korea. So I go to Korea, and what's the first thing? So I went from the coolest thing I've done in the Army to, by the way, fastest way for you to get promoted here is to get demoted. Actually, it's like you're not going up in rank, you're gonna go down. I actually went up in rank while I was there, but that was how they entered. I was fucking pissed. So like, then I go, and I've been deployed before, and most of the people in Korea get Korea out of basic training. So yeah, they had some sergeants. They had some sergeants who'd been there since they've been privates. They just keep re-upping to stay in Korea because it's literally a fucking, like, party every day. It's so dumb.
And so what do the rankings mean, like E5, E6?
The E rankings are your typical enlisted personnel. They start with private and they work all the way up to sergeant major. The ranks he's talking about specifically is E5 is sergeant, E6 is staff sergeant. Korea is known for not being a great place to actually progress your military career.
It's more of like you go stay the same or be demoted, which is not a great thing. I would agree. Maybe in telling people, especially those coming fresh out, and especially he's done that first tour.
To me, it would be demoralizing. It almost kills your incentive
to try
to work towards something, to try. Yeah. At first, when he arrived in Korea, Jake still tried his best. He still did what he could to be a useful soldier. You heard him say that he did manage to get a promotion while in Korea. He would take time out of his day to personally train the younger soldiers, to show them and teach them the things they would need to know for the rest of their career in the military. But like many of the soldiers that were already in Korea, this is when Jake entered what many called the party phase.
A couple of those guys liked to drink, got me back into drinking. Thus started the party phase of Korea, which is what most of the people do. So most of the people, we're gonna start after work. So most people drink until they have, till they're gonna close the ability to get on post, which is like 3 in the morning, maybe 2, one of the two, right? Then all of those people jump on a bus and come back onto base, which takes about 20 to 30 minutes. So let's say it's 2 o'clock. Just, we're still going to do some math here, right? So 2 o'clock takes about a half hour to get back to your barracks. You come back at 2:30, roughly, you get probably that building, about 2:40. You go up to your barracks room, say hi to CQ. They tell you're dumb. Fucking, it's about 2:50. You get to your room. You try to go to bed. You fall asleep 3:15. You wake up at 5:45 and start your day. Still drunk. You go to PT formation. They assume you're drunk. They just know you're drunk because everybody's drunk. So you're going to run, and you're going to run a long goddamn ways. And then you run, and then you come back, and then everybody goes to eat, and they're still drunk, but less drunk because you just sweated most of it out. And then you go to work drunk. By lunch, you're mildly okay. Enough to plan to go out and get drunk again. And then you're doing that on cycle every day. Korea, to me, like, it's a fucking joke. I wish I never went to Korea. Like, I really had a good time, and I love Korea, and if all the shit goes down in America, I'm moving to Korea, so I'm happy I went there. Military-wise, wish I never fucking went to Korea. By the time I left Korea, I went from my first sergeant telling me I'm the ideal soldier, he told me that once, to he wanted to fucking murder me because, like, why the fuck are you doing this? Like, you went from being amazing to, like, you are fucking useless now, because now I have a drinking problem again. I personally feel it helped ruin me. Do I take personal responsibility for it? Yes. I did that. I made that choice. But, yeah, fuck Korea. Love the place. I would move there. Military-wise, wish I never went there.
It's unfortunate that the party scene for the military in Korea is what prompted him to get back into drinking. As someone who's been to South Korea, it is a very beautiful country. It's very nice. People are friendly. I really did like my time when I was there. So I do understand the appeal of wanting to go, you know, if anything, as you mentioned, if the U.S. went to pot.
Jake would deploy once more before finally getting the option to go home. And when asked why he wanted to leave the Army...
Because I hadn't seen Sterling. I was deployed. I was overseas 3.5 years out of 5.5. I wasn't there for that time. My dad wasn't around when I was a kid. I told you before. I didn't want that for my kid. And I knew that at 17. And with all the things, you know, that was the middle of my... The Korea was the middle of my Army. I refixed myself again at my next unit stateside. That helped fix me again. I met some really good friends. And I got back to being a good soldier again, basically, when I went stateside again. So when it came to my contract, I needed to be around my kid. So I came home. That was the end of that. Relatively the same thing that made me go in made me come out. I tried to do it for him. When I was in, I didn't see him a lot. But you're in a contract, so it's not like you can just leave. Like, I never saw Sterling at all. It was like I was in for 5.5 years, and I saw him a total of 3 months. Like, in 5 years.
So at this point, he's made that decision to leave the military to see his son. He joined the military to make sure that he could meet the court mandate, get him health care, and he wanted to be there for his son, but he ended up essentially missing most of his childhood. And it's unfortunate because he's missing it to make sure that his son has a good rest of his life. And it's kind of a catch-22, so to speak.
It's unfortunate that essentially what drove Jake to join the military was this need to provide for his son, which results in him not being there for his son.
So, like, I got back, and at first I just went and I stayed with my mom for like a week, and then I moved in with Alicia, Sterling's mom, for a little bit, just staying with her so I could be around Sterling. Alicia told me she might actually want to get back together with me, and I didn't want to do that because I didn't trust her, so I moved to La Crosse. I went and talked to Justin. I'm like, hey, Justin, I'm moving to La Crosse. Where are you moving to? No idea. Go on. Right now. Get in the car. So we moved to La Crosse. We came up here, met Chris. The guy's mom who told me that I had a problem before, he was up here. So I went and we ended up staying with him for multiple months for free, crashing on his couch, me and Justin. Mind you, so right, I just told you I moved back to see my kid. And then I moved away from my kid again immediately. Fucking genius. doing some math. So we got a job at that APAC place that doesn't exist, the Verizon call center place where I met your sister, right? Yeah, that job fucking blows. Like, being a call center person and having people call in and yell at you about shit that you didn't do, just give those people a break, all right? For real, just have some patience. Give those people a break because they are trying to help you most of the time. Like,
it's funny he mentioned that because my friend worked there as well, and she also passionately disliked working as a call center representative just because people think they're entitled to scream and yell at you, and you're just there collecting a paycheck. So, you know, don't yell at the people that are trying to help you out. But I do like that he recognized that he moved back for his son and then immediately moved to another place away from him, but he ended up meeting Star.
Jake is married to my sister, Star, and this was when they met, after Jake got out of the military, after he moved to La Crosse, and at that call center. That's where my sister was working at the time, and that's where they met. They hit it off, and they've been together since. My sister got pregnant, and shortly after, the two of them decided to move down to the Prairie du Chien area.
We moved down there. Me and your sister did. We had two kids, and when we moved down there, I had a plan in my head. Like, I knew that I just went from a shitty paying job to a pretty decent paying job, and I knew with the debt that we had from school, it was going to take us X amount of years to be able to be in a position where we can buy a house. And I was able to keep that in mind and just keep grinding away every day. And yeah, life sucks. Yeah, there's a lot of things that we can change, but I grounded away. We finally got a house last year. Now I'm transitioning into the part of my life where I finally feel that my life is stable again. I have two daughters and my son, who still lives with his mom up here, but he comes and visits. We have a great relationship. I have a good relationship with his mom. I have a stable house for my two younger daughters and your sister.
I'm glad to hear that he found that stability that he's been looking for and essentially needing since literally finding out that he was having Sterling bouncing around job to job, going to the military. What we've learned so far from Jake is that he can, when needed, is step up and perform. He was able to join the military to provide for his kids. He was able to try to hold those jobs just so he can, again, provide for Sterling. And now, as he mentioned, he's grinding out this job so that they could pay off their student loan debt, get a house, and he's essentially done that. And that's something that a lot of people can't do. It's hard for people to make changes at times.
Since he was a senior in high school, since learning that he was going to be a father, he's been pushing himself time and again to provide for the family that he was ultimately going to have. It's good to hear that he's made it past the struggles of not being able to keep a job down for one reason or another. And he's finally reached a point in his life where he's not just thinking about the now, he's also able to think about the future and try to prepare. Part of the stability that he's been able to find recently has been the relationships that he's been able to build with his children.
I ended up helping Alicia fill out an application from the wonderful training I got from the military and from my HSED. I went through like four different ways to teach me how to fill out an application to get a job. But I helped her fill out one to get a job up here in La Crosse. So while I was up here, so she moved up here. She got a job at the school in La Crosse. And yeah, me and Sterling reconnected. And then, of course, I ended up moving back down there. So now it only comes down on the weekends and whatnot. But he just got his license recently, so hopefully he comes and visits me more. But yeah, I think our relationship's really good. I try to teach him everything I can, and he's a smart fucking kid, so he also understands that even my jaded way of teaching things sometimes, because I don't like stupidity. So sometimes I can be very sarcastic. But he doesn't even get frustrated about it. He just knows how I am now. Like, yeah, I don't know. I love my son. I think he's an amazing person. I think he will be better than me. And that should be the goal of every person, is your children who are going to replace you, make them better people than you are. Don't have them replace you. Make them better. That's how we progress. If they are worse than you, you fucked up.
How are your daughters?
They're Anya's just hitting the age of reason. So things are fun with her right now. She will do something wrong, and then you will, or say something wrong that isn't true, and you will correct her, and then she will tell you you're wrong, and then I'll have to explain her why I'm right, and then I'll have to prove it, and then after I prove it, I have to Google it to prove it again, like, and then she's like, okay, you're right, but she never takes my word for anything, like, at all, like, for anything. She's like, Dad, what color is a bean? Well, a bean is green, Anya. Are you sure? I've seen brown beans before. Like, oh my God. Yes, I'm sorry. The actual bean seed can be brown. It can be green. It can be yellow. But usually, like, the green beans, it's green beans for a reason. Oh, yes, the green bean. But I was talking about the lima bean, Dad. Like, God damn it. Like, she's just that age. So, like, and she's always argumentative. She's my kid. Clearly my kid. She's got my stubbornness, my willingness to argue. No, they're wonderful. I think Anya's very inquisitive. She's going to be really smart. Brinley has a really big imagination, and she's just 5 now, so I think they'll be fine. But the jury's still out on whether I'm a good parent or not. We'll find out.
It's always a process.
Right? That's how it works. But I think I'm doing a good job. None of my kids are crazy. They have a better life than I did when I was at their age. They have a more stable life. It was a little more hectic for a while, but it's definitely more stable. Your sister is a great mom. Like, she's actually wonderful. So that helps a lot.
It's great to hear that he's happy. Like, he's talking about his kid, and he, you know, he's able to self-reflect. Like you said, the jury's still out if he's a good parent. Like, you never know if you're a good parent until, like, your kids are old enough and you're like, you were a good parent, you were a bad parent. You know, they'll let you know. And it sounds like maybe Anya will let him have it. So, but I do like his comment that, you know, he's recognizing that Star is, like, a great mom. That was very sweet.
Anya and Brinley are my nieces, and I don't get to see them very often, unfortunately, living up in Minneapolis, and they're down in the Prairie du Chien area. But they're adorable. They're both little brats occasionally, as all kids are. With the stability Jake's been able to find, he's been able to focus more on the future. But that future doesn't just include his family. He's thinking a little broader than that.
My next goal is to be able to change, hopefully, the way America works. And we'll see if I'm able to do that at any point. But I personally think people are inherently good, and I'm not the person with the answer. That's not me. The new generation's really good with that. I'm the guy who can ask the right questions so they know what they're answering, and that's what I want to be. I don't have to be the senator or the governor or anything like that to do that. If I can just be the campaign manager or the guy underneath them so I can tell that person, hey, this is what you should be asking to see, you know, that'd be great too. If I can be the senator, cool. I can be more direct about it. But if I can just help somebody actually help the country for the positive, that's what I want to do moving forward. I spend way too much time caring about the country as a whole and the well-being of it. I truly, from my experiences in life, I believe everybody's a person. I do not believe all people are created equal at all. I was telling you that earlier. Some people are really good at one thing. Some people are really good at another thing. Stop pretending everybody should be good at everything. That's not how it works. Everybody's good at something different. But everybody is a human, and they all should have the same rights. And I think that if we ever get to the point where people can just fucking accept that, and they don't even, yeah, they don't even have to accept it. Just fucking deal with the fact everybody's a goddamn person. Treat everybody like a person, and we'll be fine. And there's just too many people that aren't treated like people. Like, I'm in a pretty good position now, but most of that story, like, when I was a kid, I lived in a fucking trailer, a mobile home, which, you know, whatever, that is what it is. I lived in a mobile home. I lived with my grandma. I went in the military, came back, I lived on my fucking friend's couch. I lived with you because I needed a place to stay. You had an apartment, I didn't. Then we moved back down to Waseca. We live in my sister's basement. This is me and my kids. Then we're able to get a mobile home, and I finally got a house. Like, I've lived in shit, like the lower income level of the American society forever. And I'm finally at a position where I feel stable. And what I lived in when I was younger, growing up, I would like to create a system where that's not happening to anybody. We should be able to do that as a society. We really should. And if we can't, there's a fucking problem.
I think his interpretation of everyone created equal is maybe a little bit different than most. He essentially does hit it after, you know, saying that at the end of the day, we're all human. We should come together and that we should celebrate, essentially celebrate our differences.
I agree with Jake that not everyone is created equal. Different people have different strengths, and those strengths, in my opinion, should be built on. They should be reinforced so that people can excel at what they're good at. That being said, like Jake has mentioned, I also believe everyone should be treated like they are people.
I do like that he has a lot of compassion. I think maybe from his military experience, you know, he's been able to work with a diverse group of people. He's been across the globe. You know, he's had those interactions that maybe, you know, a lot of Americans haven't had because we're so isolated from other countries.
When I asked him if he had any intentions of running for office, he said he would like to, but he has not attempted to do so yet. So, for those of you living in Wisconsin, particularly southwestern Wisconsin, don't be surprised if you see Jacob Meyer on your ballot in the future. If you enjoyed this episode of Tales Through Time, we have plenty more in the works. Keegan, you already have something planned and scheduled for us as well, don't you?
Yeah, I will be interviewing Michael DiPietro. He, from a young age, was exposed to spirits. One of his earliest memories of his first encounters was waking up in the middle of the night having a dream that his sheets are being pulled off of his bed. So he woke up to them actually being pulled off of his bed and actually struggling to pull them back up. He grew up in New Orleans, Louisiana, and we all know that that is a site that a lot of people tour for a lot of different reasons. So there will be plenty of more stories that he'll be sharing during that time.
So stay tuned to Tales Through Time. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Patreon if you're willing to help us progress our storytelling here. That is Tales Through Time, TalesThruTime. Recording in Minneapolis.
And Viroqua.
I'm Troy Newman.
And I'm Keegan Rudwick. Thank you for joining us.